The Founders Live Podcast tells unique and inspiring stories of entrepreneurship from all over the world. Be sure to join thousands of entrepreneurs on founderslive.com. Now, quick word from our sponsors before we get started. Hey everyone, it's Nick. The world tells us there's not enough pie to go around. So what? We'll just make a bigger pie. Our new partner, Women in Cloud, has taken action with global leaders and policymakers to help women entrepreneurs create $1 billion in economic access by 2030. The joint partnership between Founders Live and Women in Cloud is part of the global expansion work to create $1 billion or more in economic access for women entrepreneurs. As a part of this partnership, we will join forces to provide incredible joint community access to education and advisors in helping them build successful enterprise-ready companies. In addition, both of the communities are invited to be a part of the UN delegation and collectively address UN Sustainable Development Goal Number 5 by 2030. Learn more at womenincloud.com. Hey everyone, this is Founders Live Podcast. We tell unique and inspiring stories of entrepreneurship from all around the world. I am Nick Hughes. I am the CEO and founder of Founders Live. And today's guest, we have Lori Most. She is from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and she is the founder and CEO of Binary Bridge. Lori, how are you doing today?
Hi, great, great. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome, Lori. Lori is a recent Founders Live Minneapolis winner from one of our recent virtual events that we held. So we're really excited to hear more about what you're building, which is really interesting, really cool solution and to a very interesting problem. But before we get going on that, Lori, just tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. Most of my experience has been in software. So I went to college and started out in aerospace engineering. I kind of was all over the place, but I feel like that's kind of the entrepreneurial spirit, right? So I started out in aerospace engineering, switched to math, switched to pre-med with a physiology major. Ultimately, I did end up graduating, thank goodness, with my math degree. And the physiology as well, double major. And then got my education master's degree. I was gonna be a teacher. So I went through all kinds of different careers in my kind of college experience. And ultimately I ended on coding. So I did go through a boot camp actually to learn some coding after I graduated and just decided that's the way I wanted to go. So I started out coding and I did that for about 10 years. Almost 15, and I kind of switched more into maybe some design. That was kind of at the time when, as a developer, you are not only coding, but you're also designing, you are talking to the users, you're managing your own project, you're doing all the testing, you're doing the deployment. Like that was all one person way back when I started. And we kind of started to all, you know, branch off after that. So that's why I moved more into design on the front end and then over into product ownership and some of the requirements gathering. So that's kind of my career. I did some work for, you know, bigger companies in the Twin Cities, T.H. Robinson, Target, you know, that's always a big one here in the Twin Cities, United Health Group. But then, yeah, ultimately decided I need to go a different path. So that's kind of my background.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. And, you know, the thing that jumps out to me, and this is just an observation, you know, I'm just curious your answer to it, but there's a world of difference between a teacher and an entrepreneur. And so what, you know, did you maybe not feel fully connected to the profession as a teacher, or what changed for you to really get into this incredibly uncomfortable environment, life, you know, just journey that is an entrepreneur versus a little more stable aspect of teaching and education?
Yeah, that is an interesting question. I have a lot of family who are teachers, and I think is kind of in our blood to want to help other people and help them to learn. I think, especially in math. So many people struggle in math, but I love it. And my ideal career at, you know, that point as I was graduating was if I could just sit in a room and do calculus problems all day long and get paid for it, I would love it, right? That really gets me excited. And so I wanted to help other people understand that math was applicable in true life, right? And so that was kind of my motivation to go that route. And honestly, when I changed my mind was part of student teaching. So I started looking at maybe helping in high schools, and the disciplining kids was not very exciting for me, especially just graduating, right? So I realized people didn't really want to learn and as much as I wanted them to, right? They weren't as excited as I was hoping. So that was part of it. The other struggle was I really wanted something a little more technical too. And so I was realizing I wasn't kind of reaching that point of technical experiences I was hoping for. So teaching is really hard too. I think being an entrepreneur and being a teacher are both really, really hard. I think at the end of the day, you never feel like you've done everything, right? So at the end of the day as a teacher, I was like, oh, if only I had done this thing, that kid would have understood this. Or if I only I had done this extra little thing, right? So in that case, they're very similar.
Yeah. For everyone listening, it's difficult, and you kind of always feel like your list of to-dos is like 100, if not 1,000 long, and you don't feel like you did everything right. It's an interesting road, but it's fun, and you know, that's why we do it.
Absolutely.
Let's see, you participated in Founders Live Minneapolis in May, and that was a virtual event. Tell us about that, your experience, and you know, maybe a little bit of thoughts on how you even prepared to deliver your 99-second pitch.
Yeah, that event was really fun. I was preparing for a live pitch that was we were going to do the Founders Live in March. And so preparing for that was a little bit different than preparing for the virtual event. So for the live event, I locked myself in a conference room and I ran through that 90-second pitch over and over and over and over again to memorize it, but still be able to deliver it in a convincing way. So that preparation was a little bit different than the virtual event where, you know, you can always have a cheat sheet next to you and nobody really knows, right? So that was a little bit different.
Oh, you're fessing up.
I'm totally, totally. I will confess. So, so it was a little bit different. But the 90 seconds is kind of fun because you have to try to squeeze in so much information in a tiny bit of time. I mean, I could talk for hours about what we do. And so 90 seconds is like nothing.
Yeah. It's, you know, we do that for a reason. And as an entrepreneur, to really condense your value proposition and your, you know, what is it that people are really going to take hold and remember and care about in this short period of time, that's the job. You know, when you do go through Founders Live, the job is to condense, because look, you know, if there's one group of people I know pretty much in and out, it's entrepreneurs and founders. And we think this stuff every day. We think it at night when we sleep, we dream it, we eat it, we drink it, we everything. Right. And so to then say like, oh geez, like all this stuff in my mind and the vision, how do we push it into this like small container? It's not easy, but the beauty is afterwards, what you've learned through the process is so important going forward, you know? So maybe what was one takeaway outside of like, you know, it's nice to be voted the winner and that's all good and fun and great. But what also did you kind of take away from the experience after you prepared for so long?
Yeah, that for this particular pitch, I think it showed me, I think especially after you and I talked a little bit, there's some question and answer kind of thing. I realized we had to change our pitch pretty drastically, which is a bummer because I felt like we had just gotten it down, right? And it took years to really hone the pitch to be like an elevator pitch, really, and get people to understand what we're doing. But with the pandemic, with COVID happening, there have been a lot of changes in our industry. And just having that conversation after the pitch with you really taught me or showed me that we need to change the way we're pitching now, because we're no longer pitching to the same industry as we were. We have to do this little pivot. So actually, we've drastically changed the way we're pitching now.
Interesting.
After Founders Live.
Hey, look at that. That's great. That's why we're here. This might be a good time to even just jump into the problem you're solving. What is that solution? So your company's Binary Bridge, but you obviously have you have a product, or at least one, if not more. But let's start with, like, what did you identify in the world that needed to be fixed? And then we'll come to what you then, your solution to that.
Sure. Yeah. The kind of origin story is that I was working at Target at the time, right after the breach from the guest data breach, and working on some of the security and helping with guest authentication. And that was really good and meaningful for me. I felt like I was trying to help protect, you know, data. And I love Target. We all have Target here in Minnesota. But I still wasn't feeling like I was doing what I wanted to do in society and helping the world. So I went on a trip with my sister. She was doing some surgeries down in Peru, and they were all pro bono surgeries. And so I went with her just to see if I could help that organization with some efficiency gains. And they had been doing this for quite a while. They did everything on paper, which honestly, sometimes paper is the right solution, right? So they were tracking their patients that way, and they were able to facilitate a clinic pretty well that way. But what I saw while I was there was when they would have patients that they'd seen previously, they would typically go down 4 or 5 times a year. And they'd been doing this for 10 years. So they have lots of previous patients. So when they would see those patients, they would need to figure out what happened the last time, or if they had surgery last year, what kind of surgery, what did they do, what was the procedure, how did that go forward? And a lot of that information was just on papers that were still in the U.S., right? And so it was really hard for them to see any past information. Also, when they were planning the surgeries for the next day, they had to shuffle all these papers with random photos on different devices that people took of the injury sites or x-rays to figure out what they were going to do the next day. And so we were up until 1 o'clock in the morning that night trying to figure that out for surgeries the next day. And I just thought, man, we could really be helped by just having a just clean patient file, just like an EMR we have in the U.S., right? So that was the problem.
And was it hard to see? Or, I mean, even sometimes when you're in those environments, you're just like, oh my gosh, like this is how far back they are. And in the end, it just results in possibly lives lost. So how difficult was it to even see that, of like, man, this is difficult to digest? And then, you know, even like, is it a mountain of a problem to even try to solve? Walk us through that thinking in there, because that's like, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, that was a tough little journey that I had. I was thinking, can I help? This seems like a really big problem. And it's not like anyone has solved this problem. So I was like, well, how am I going to figure this out, right? And so I did a little bit of chatting. I remember being on a train. We were taking a train to see Machu Picchu while we were still in Peru. And I was just, this is all going through my brain. Like, how can we fix this? There's no internet. You know, there's inconsistent electricity even. Like, how can we, you know, build some sort of digital tool for them to use in this scenario and share data amongst all of their devices, right, with those conditions? So I did a lot of brainstorming, I remember, on that train, and just thinking, you know what, we're going to figure this out. And so I told the organizers too, like, we're going to do it, right? And so I did look off the shelf for a lot of things. You know, I know how hard it is to tackle software, and especially this issue, right? This is such a big issue. But there was nothing that met the need. And so that's when I just figured, we got to do it, right? We got to try to solve it.
Yeah. So you created Backpack EMR. So tell us about that in, you know, what is the product? What is the experience? And how is it bringing this solution to the rural areas of the world?
So we did create Backpack EMR. It was, I'm trying to think of a good way to put this. it was a tough decision to first start doing it, but then the actual execution of it, one thing that was easy about it was I knew a lot of technology folks, right, being in the tech sector. And so I was able to find a really good group who could help me figure out this kind of crazy offline peer-to-peer networking system. And so we did that and did it as a prototype. And that was in 2015. And so within, I don't know, 5 months or so, we had a prototype ready. And so we did do a kind of trial run that November, and it was successful. And so we were able to share data while completely offline. All that data flowed seamlessly through. And that's when I knew we had something big, right? And so I was pretty excited, although I just thought, well, we helped this group, right? And I went back to work. So I had actually taken 6 months off just to build the prototype. And then I went back to work at United Health Group. And we started going around doing these grand rounds. So talking to other physicians and just kind of presenting what we did with the core organization group. And we had physicians coming up and asking how much it was. Could they buy it for their own pro bono surgical trips that they were doing? And that's when I figured we had a company. So 2016 is when I quit my day job and started the company. So that's when really Backpack EMR was truly born, is 2016 then.
Nice. Little side note, or like a little side path here. Was it scary to quit your day job, or walk us through the thinking of now's the time?
Yeah, quitting your day job is never an easy thing. It's especially hard because I felt like I worked so hard to get where I was through kind of corporate America, right? Like, I'm a woman in a male-dominated industry, and I feel like I worked really hard to get where I was, get the salary I was getting, and to quit was a little bit tough. It's nice because I had a family, so my husband is also working, so we at least had one income that we could fall back on. However, his job is being a risk manager for a transportation company, and so he's very risk-averse, where I am kind of like, caution to the wind, let's do this, right? So we had a few different discussions, but ultimately it was just, let's try it. Why not? Right. So we always I thought in my mind it would be a short term thing as far as quitting my job and not having a salary. But here we are in year four, still no salary. Right. But still chugging along. So we're making it work.
Good. I had someone recently message me and ask, I don't necessarily know this individual. But they messaged me and asked in a roundabout way, they basically were asking, is this a good time or a bad time to start a company or to start this entrepreneurial journey? And, my response was simply, there is no right time.
Right. Yep.
There is no optimal time to like make the leap and start something. It's only just get started. And the timing or not is much more around personal, personal things. And, do you have savings or not? Do you have a partner that can maybe have the salary or not? What's your living situation? Are you ready to take this leap? Have you found a problem in the world to solve? These are the things that, quote, the timing is right or not. Not like an external, environment. And quite frankly, there is arguments to say like in a downturn, it's actually better to start a company. And we're not going to go down that road. But I think for you, basically you identified there's certain things, there's momentum and movement. And then at some point it's like, I got to do this.
Yeah.
And that's the key with an entrepreneur. And as a founder, if you're listening and you're wondering, okay, I'm working on this thing on the side, but I have a full-time job. At some point, there just has to be a decision that you're committing full time and you're making the run. It's it, And, I think sounds like you evaluated the entire situation and said, you know what, it's time. And yeah, of course, you're not to the fullest extent where you want to be and you're still working towards that. But look at where you're at and, the things that are happening now and your traction and movement. Which I want to dovetail into. Clearly, you mentioned earlier with the experience of Founders Live, that was really, I mean, we're smack in the middle of this pandemic. So how has COVID, you know, changed the angle of focus right now for especially Backpack EMR? How did, when that started to really come into play, like how has that shifted your focus?
Yeah, that was a tough one. So as soon as, you know, wind of COVID started to kind of float around, it was December or so, and a lot of the groups that we would be our potential customers are, you know, US-based teams, medical teams who are traveling overseas to these really underserved populations in very rural, low-income countries. And so they stopped traveling. So as soon as December hit, January, they were canceling trips. And so the majority of people who would have been potential customers and purchasing our system to go on, you know, some of these medical trips in, you know, February, March, April, they did not purchase it. And rightfully so, right? They're not going, they don't need it yet, right? So they were just put it on hold. But as we've been watching the COVID pandemic, it's really pretty easy to see that it's not going to happen, or it's not going to go back to the way things were anytime soon, right? So people are not going to feel super comfortable traveling in the next 2 months, or, you know, even fall, or probably even winter time. So that's when we really knew we had to start pivoting. We actually initially did a one quick pivot in March, which was COVID started to hit in Kenya. And we've got a lot of connections in Kenya. And so we started researching pretty hardcore with the World Health Organization, the CDC, other, you know, health leaders and global officials, you know, what can we do? What can we do? And so we quickly, you know, made ourselves a COVID tracker solution, or really morphed Backpack EMR to handle COVID cases as well. And so we started pitching that to governments. We pitched that to Kenya, who did approve us. We're just waiting to roll that out. And then Tanzania, Liberia, we've talked to Rwanda, and now we're working pretty closely in Senegal with a few groups. And so that's one quick kind of pivot we did. And that included like the dashboards and all those things that you need to track COVID from a countrywide scenario. But on top of that, like I said, kind of our typical customer base, which are these US-based groups that are helping in these rural environments, we wanted to continue to help them as well. And so all of these groups still want to help. These medical professionals still want to give advice and help out in those rural locations. And, you know, non-COVID cases haven't stopped happening, right? And so there's still basic healthcare that's needed. And so we have now started working on telemedicine, which of course is rampant right now in the US as well. It's everywhere now, virtual visits. We've got a slight difference in our scenario where our groups can't do video chats. You can't do that. You don't have the internet connectivity in these rural locations to try to video chat and see your patient. So we've worked on more of an asynchronous telehealth solution where some of the local teams can now run these mini clinics using our system offline, and then they can come back and upload their data where it can be then reviewed by, the charts can be reviewed by the medical professionals that otherwise would have been traveling. So they can give diagnosis and treatment plans kind of from afar. So that's another slight pivot that we made as well. So we're trying to still serve the same, you know, beneficiaries, the same groups that we were helping before, but just with different technology.
Yeah, so interesting. Take us out. Let's go out, you know, 3 to 5 years. What is the vision of the company, and even like, you know, the solutions you bring to healthcare? Yeah, let's just talk about what you see in the future.
Yeah, so what I'm hoping for Backpack EMR, where we're kind of trying to position ourselves, is really those outlying, kind of the most rural, last mile sort of solution, where people can kind of run these clinics, and then our system would integrate with the urban hospitals or the closer clinics, so that data can be there locally as well. So the idea would be we'd start partnering with other EMRs that are in bigger clinics and hospitals, where we can be kind of like their satellite EMR, where they can't do this peer-to-peer syncing that we're doing offline. But, you know, when the people that we've seen come into the urban areas to get surgeries or have a baby or, you know, cancer treatment or any of those bigger things, we want them to have those records too. and they want to have those records. So I think I see us from a 3 to 5 year plan out that we would continue to build out our really rural EMR services, maybe start building out a few more of the telehealth pieces, along with maybe being able to be used in small clinics where we include things like billing and scheduling that we don't need out in those remote pop-up clinics. But that's where I'd see us going. So we still want to go outwards in, and we can slowly keep coming in to closer to the urban centers without being a big EMR for hospitals and big clinics.
Yeah. How is it, how is it as, just like thinking about how to ask this question in the exact right way, but you know, you're here in the United States, you're in Minneapolis, yet your usage and your customers are like on various other sides of the world. And, you know, I understand this now much more with Founders Live. I mean, we're worldwide, you know, we're in massively different time zones and even possibly different languages. How have you gone about your just operations and understanding your customers when they could actually be different countries, different languages and all that?
Yeah, that's a great question. We, I've traveled a lot, especially early on. So I would go on a lot of these trips so that I could see what it was like culturally, what the differences were, what the real problems were, pain points. And part of that too was to build up some networking as well. So really meeting the people locally so that we could have champions locally in these different countries who could help us then as liaisons when we're talking to other customers. And so, for example, we have one contractor who is in Kenya, and she has been doing a fantastic job working with the local government. So she's working with the Ministry of Health, with other health officials locally in Kenya to really help us get our foot in the door. And then she's building other partnerships locally as well. It's the same in Senegal. We have someone there who's also, you know, helping to pitch for us. So where we can't be there, we could certainly do something virtual, but it's not as powerful and it's not as culturally, you know, tight as if someone locally is doing the pitch for us. So I see my job as being more of that like ambassador kind of person, right? Like really building up champions locally who can have the same passion that I have and that we have for this product, who can then kind of champion it for us.
Mm, weird, because it's a very similar model to what we've adopted. You know, when that really was as Founders Live launched and then started to grow around the United States and around the world, that was the decision that we made, was really about, you know, what we call our city leaders. And those are our champions on the ground and ambassadors that really drive and grow and run Founders Live events and activities in those areas. And, you know, when you talk about internationally, it is so important for a company to have local champions that they trust, that understand the brand, and that can drive the activity there on the ground when you, the CEO, is not there. Right. And it takes some effort. It takes time and, you know, a process and some education with these individuals and figuring out how to continually update them, all that good stuff. But that is hugely important. And these are, the great thing is these are like, they're teammates. They're a part of your organization, and it's fun to really see that develop. So do you, you just mentioned you usually, is that like face-to-face stuff that you identify them, or do you kind of just use in digital ways, connections and ability to meet them virtually if you need to?
So far we've met most of them in person, and some of them just happened by accident. You know, maybe I would be talking to somebody as a potential customer and they turn into an ambassador and a champion who's on the ground. So that's happened on a few locations. There were a couple that are a little bit more virtual, so especially partnerships. So those are a little bit tough, and especially now with COVID. I can't be flying to go meet people in person, which is a bummer. But like in Tanzania, we've got some really solid partnerships being built with some doctor organizations, and that's all been virtual over WhatsApp primarily. So it is a little bit tougher to build up that trust. That's a little harder when you're not in person, but that's the world we live in now. So that's kind of just how we're building those relationships.
So cool. Good job. We don't really have too much time left, but I did want to just touch on, you know, we're very interested in we'd like to get your perspective and then how we can help, but specifically around, you know, as a female founder, it's not easy. And, you know, we're really working, especially Founders Live, but the industry is working on how do we improve these conditions, whether it's underrepresented through gender or, you know, race or orientation. You know, I guess my question would be, what can we do to help? I mean, what in what areas would you look towards? Hey, you know, these are like the two or three things that I would really appreciate, or we would really appreciate. I'm just curious, how can we help?
That's a great question. I guess the things that I need the most help with, I would say, would be investors and finding investors. And I know that's very common, right? So I think maybe even just some promotion or, you know, investor intros, those kind of things would be great. If anyone listening knows of investors who might be interested in our industry, that's probably the hardest part. And, you know, whether it is being a female founder or just our industry, it's been really difficult to find the right investors that are interested in the work that we're doing and can as a investor, I completely understand you want to invest in a company and an industry that you understand so that you can help or at least understand if the ship is going in the right direction. But this is an industry that not a lot of investors understand or know or are familiar with. And so I think it's been a little bit tougher for me in that respect. So I don't know, anything on the investor front and just getting in front of people who really know and understand this industry would be super helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, I think in general, you know, just, you know, look, make the intro, you know, and I'm speaking to the audience here, but, you know, make, no matter what an individual looks like, no matter, you know, what they identify as, make those intros, open the door. That's why we talk about open the door, and that's a core value. You know, and I think that, going back to, I guess, kind of wrapping up here, you know, you are in the city that really was kind of the lightning rod for even the second wave of just uprise and outcry of the social injustice and racial injustice. And, you know, it's, I think the fact is, like, things are really starting to be talked about. And, you know, so what has been your experience being in Minneapolis, seeing this kind of front and center, and really, like, how has it impacted you? And the connection here is that, you know, not to say they're exactly the same, but when you talk about, like, underrepresented founders, if they're female founders, you know, there's low percentage of investment towards, you know, just female founding companies, and that needs to be talked about and changed. And at the same time, you know, racial injustice just really is about needing to be talked about, and action needs to be changed. So from that perspective, like, what has been your viewpoint of these things that you're in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, I definitely have thoughts on this for sure. And so I can first, if I can at least touch on, like, how it's affected us from a Minneapolis perspective, and then about how can we help. So I can kind of do a two-parter. But initially, from the Minneapolis perspective, my office is located right on Lake Street, which is where George Floyd was murdered. So a lot of the protests and rioting and looting and burning all happened right along that corridor. So we were very fearful. So if we want to talk about how things were going, there's a pandemic going on, right? And then this happens and you're already thinking, like, my heart is already going out to everything happening with George Floyd, his family, that community, everything. And then on top of that, we have the rioting and looting, and all of the buildings are getting burned right near our office, and there are no police to stop it. I don't know if you heard, there were 150 or some businesses burned on that Friday night. And so I was, like, glued to the TV trying to see if there's any footage that's close to us, you know, what's happening to our building. you know, nothing luckily was burned, like right in our block. Well, the gas station across the street was burned down. But we did have some looting on either side of us, but our building was fine. So I did go that next day to take as much out of the office as I could, because there was no guarantee that the next night wasn't going to be the same. And wow. I thought, oh, so there's a lot of movement. You know, I tried to grab as much as I could, and, you know, we kind of boarded up a few things, but just kind of crossing our fingers that, you know, we were going to be okay. And luckily we were fine in the end. But if you're like, just from a feeling perspective, you have all these emotions, right? Like you're worried and afraid and fear, and you still want to help and you want to fight the injustice, and all this stuff is going on, right? So that was a very tumultuous time in our company. That's for sure. So the next day, was that Sunday? Right after that weekend, my team, we all just decided there was no way we were going to get anything done work-wise. So we went down to help with some of the cleanup. We scrubbed some graffiti off from around the city, things like that. I think many, many people in this community got out to help, especially for those people whose buildings did get burned down. There were a lot of small businesses like us that were struggling anyway. And so that was really tough for us to see. But on the flip side, so most of that has now been kind of calmed down. But I kept thinking in my mind, what is it that we can do, right? So sure, we can help clean up, but really it's not making that big of an impact. What can I help with as far as this injustice goes? And I thought, well, who's on my team? White males are my other teammates. And I was kind of thinking, well, why is that? You know, what's my problem with, you know, do I need to do some soul searching? Why am I not hiring people of color? You know, granted, I haven't had that many hires, but still, I kind of thought, you know, I have been hiring people who I trust and have worked with in the past, and I haven't worked with many people of color. And so that is on me, I think, to find more people that I trust that are maybe, you know, are different than me, right? And so from my standpoint, the thing that I feel like I can do, rather than just posting on social media my agreement, or, you know, saying, like, I'm not a big fan of people who just talk with no action. And so I think part of the action on my part is I need to be more social and go to more events where I can meet and start to build more relationships with people of color. And there are a lot of great and amazing organizations and people in the Twin Cities in the tech industry. Some of them I can call out, like the Black Tech Guy is amazing. Mondo Davison, he's someone that I would love to get to know a little bit better. And, you know, we're all busy, so I'm sure that plays into it, but I need to make a concerted effort, right, to get to know him and, you know, who he can connect me with. Similarly, Elaine Rasmussen is Social Impact Strategist. She does amazing work as well with Connect Up. So she's trying to get underrepresented founders, especially people of color, you know, connected with investors, because they also don't have those relationships. So those, I think, are things that when I think about what can I do, that's not just words, you know, it's not just saying that, you know, we need to fight this racism and injustice. Those are things I can do personally.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you. That was just really encouraging words. And, you know, that at this point, we have to be more authentic and honest about where we're at, and then also, you know, putting action to our words. And it sounds like you're doing that. And that's exactly what we're doing at Founders Live, and myself specifically. It's just important. And, you know, it's, that's the way that these things are going to improve, is that, you know, just even, you know, like you said, identifying, like, you're looking around your team and you're like, wait, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, maybe last year, 2 years ago, it wasn't as top of mind. Now, we can go down the road of if that was, you know, the correct or not, or like if that's the, you know, unfortunately that was the case. But now it's like top of mind. And I would encourage everyone, look around your team.
Right.
Do we all look the same? Do we have the same tone of skin color? Okay. What's our backgrounds? This is, diversity is an incredibly, like, it's now, I would say, required. So if things are going to change, it's required. So start looking at that and you know, the resources are out there, and you know, people are now having an authentic conversation about it. So don't hesitate to talk about it, ask questions, and you know, go just fix what needs to be fixed.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It is a tough conversation to have with people, but we're all thinking about it, and now is the time. Like you said, we're all actually speaking the same language, I think, here now. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Lori, this has been a great conversation. Really appreciate your time, and really, really impressed with what you're building. And you know, hey, I think it's dramatically needed, and quite frankly, it's going to be more needed as we go on. Great job. And so it's Backpack EMR, and that's really just backpackemr.com.
Right, exactly.
Great. And so you've identified some areas that you could need help in. So if anyone's listening that could help Lori and take action, you know, please reach out. So where can they find you? I mean, is there like a contact us page, or what's the best way for anyone to get in touch with you?
Yeah, there's absolutely a contact us page. You can find us on social media, but you can also just email me directly. It's Lori, L-O-R-I dot most, M-O-S-T, at backpackemr.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Lori. So good to hear about this, and congratulations again. Just keep doing the good stuff. Everyone else, thank you for listening. This is the Founders Live podcast. We tell unique and inspiring stories of entrepreneurship from all over the world. Check us out. Go to founderslive.com if you haven't. Join the community. Just people from all over the world doing great and amazing stuff. And just an honor to lead this, and would love to have you a part of it. And for everyone else, well, actually, lastly, if you are interested in having a Founders Live event originate out of your region of the world, reach out to us as well. We're definitely growing and excited to have events, whether they're in person or virtual. Please don't hesitate if you're interested and all that. So thank you all. And for everyone, stay healthy and stay safe.